Are you looking to keep up with key trends in the marketplace? Are you striving to maintain your competitive edge at work? Looking for a career change but unsure about your next move? The Skillsharp podcast is here to help you. Join industry insiders Brian, Todd, and Mike, who will guide you through new strategies for career success.
Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Skillsharp the Podcast.
At Podcast Skill to always stay sharp.
Hello and welcome to Skillsharp, the podcast where your industry insiders, Todd Nakasone, Brian Wright, and I discuss topics to help empower your career, strategies, and success. Today, we're joined by production supervisor, Audrey Pyle. Audrey Pyle is English dubbing supervisor for the Los Angeles office of SDI Media. She's responsible for developing and overseeing the production of multi-language dubbing into English. She currently runs a team of recording and editing engineers that bring voiceover talent into studio and dub animation and live action content for international clients. She works with entities like Netflix, HBO, Warner Brothers, Imagica, and Pixelogic on union and non-union dubbing projects. Audrey joined SDI in 2018. Halfway through, she began her studies for paralegal certification at UCLA Paralegal Extension Program and has just completed her year-long course. Audrey hopes to combine her love of filmmaking, her acquired skills in supervising, and her certification in law to lead her to the next steps in the entertainment industry. Audrey, welcome to Skillsharp, the podcast.
Hi, happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me. I'm so excited about this podcast. I'm like, don't even know what to do, I guess.
You are a very busy young lady.
Indeed.
So just curious, you know, talk to us a little bit about what you're doing prior to beginning work at SDI.
So before I started at SDI, I actually finished up college a little bit before that and moved to Paris, France, actually. I was really into film festivals in college, and I really wanted to see more and be part of more. So I did a couple here in the States. I did Sundance and Telluride, and then obviously Cannes is the biggest one. So I just really wanted to go and be part of it and be closer to it. So I was an au pair and was there for almost a year, and actually did get to go to the Cannes Film Festival. It was incredible. Nothing can really prepare you for what a huge just marketplace and sort of event center that is. And obviously the French coastline is beautiful. And yeah. And then I came back to California because I was born here, just to be a little bit closer to family. And just kind of trying to navigate, you know, what is Los Angeles? Very competitive, big city, a lot of people. And I've had different discussions with different people, but it's definitely like a make or break city. So if you're here and you can endure the competition and you can rise above it, I think that you do very well. It's just not your cup of tea. I don't think some people last here. So I just started searching for everything and anything. I really wanted to keep the international component. I missed being in France. I missed different languages. So I found SDI. It worked with a lot of international clients. I really liked that the company itself had a lot of international entities, translators, subtitling, dubbing, and I felt like it was a really good in. So I started on the bottom. I started as a production assistant. I was mostly just doing contracts and odds and ends, anything here and there. But again, I think just part of its personality, part of it's just like knowing Los Angeles and knowing the entertainment industry. I just knew if you paid attention and picked up things maybe where other people didn't, begin to be more valuable. So I worked my way up to a production coordinator. And then my boss actually got an opportunity at a different dubbing environment. And she moved to a different studio and I applied for her position and got the job. And that was at the beginning of this year. I had maybe two and a half, three months before COVID hit. And that was a real doozy because I was learning the lay of the land of how to be a supervisor, how to be in charge of people, you know, how to manage a team. And then everybody was gone, and dubbing and recording live and with lots of people and two pictures is a very difficult thing to do. So it took quite a bit of time for us to figure that out. So I'm very grateful. I have stayed very busy because of that. And I know it's not quite the case for everyone throughout COVID. So I definitely count my blessings in that. We did figure it out remotely, and it's quite of feet. And my engineers are actually now back in studio, but we do still record the actor and the director directs remotely as well. Every once in a while, an actor will come in to studio, but for the most part, we have a lot of actors that have changed their at-home setups and improved the audio quality. And yeah, we're still pretty able to do what we do. A lot has changed. We have a lot of new workflows, but yeah, team's trucking along.
Well, I can surely hear and detect your passion for film, Audrey. Tell us how you were able to get your initial role at SDI, that role as a production assistant. How did you find that job?
Ooh, it was one of a thousand resumes. What was really interesting was I was going for a lot of production assistant, more of, I guess you would say, bottom level positions. Partially just because, again, it is such a competitive industry. I had been living abroad and attending festivals, and I had jobs in college, but here, not everything translated to what a lot of people were asking for. So it was funny, actually, the position was literally for data entry. I put in so many resumes and so many and I talked to people. I'd had friends set me up with owners of companies just to kind of chat and navigate the land. And it had just been so long and I was so exhausted. I was like, data entry, I don't want to do that. I know I'm a lot more capable than that, but I was like, it doesn't matter. Just got to start somewhere. So again, one of a thousand applications. I went in for the recording. I was actually living in the Valley at the time and it was on the West Side and I didn't have a car. And I was like, doesn't matter. Just go to the interview. If you get it, you'll figure it out. So I went to the interview. I really loved the guy who would become my boss and there was another teammate there. We clicked. It was just a really good vibe, good interview. And when I was offered the job, I was extremely excited here right away. I still didn't have a car. I didn't know how I was going to get there every day, but I was like, take it. Absolutely. Anything in the industry to just get started.
We're undeterred. No matter what it was, get as many shot on goals. You're not going to score any goals. I think Wayne Gretzky said, you're not going to score any goals if you don't take any shots. I love your determination because, exactly. You know, recruiting for different studios, Mike, Brian, and I have probably seen, you know, a lot of those entry-level production assistant type roles. And, you know, we'll get thousands of candidates that apply. And the way you went ahead and kind of stood out amongst the crowd is kind of what you got to do, especially now in a time of COVID where there's a lot of people unemployed looking to get that same job. But how did you, I wanted to kind of go back to how you networked, you know, at these various film festivals, you know, getting experience, getting exposure. How'd you go about doing that? Was it a clear, conscious choice for you to do something like that?
Yeah, so throughout college, I definitely did a number of festivals, and it was really nice. I went to school at the University of Oregon, and within the university, it's a pretty tight-knit community, and anything that I would volunteer for, they would usually either recommend me or tell me about another fest, and then because the community was smaller, people just got to know me. Again, in the networking aspect, it's just sort of paid attention to things that maybe other people didn't, and I would kind of pick up on things of like, well, this director always kind of does it this way, or this is the guy who makes the creative choices and he seems to factor in these qualities about things. And this is the group that manages and this is how they do it. But the other festival kind of did it this way. So from there, I just kind of pick up and try to introduce myself to people that I felt could help me towards the next connections and or just be good resources in general to learn from. I really do love learning. And so anywhere that I was like, oh, what's your job and how do you do it? And I think just having that genuine interest in people really makes them open up and, oh, wow, okay, like you're interested, you're paying attention. Like, I wasn't obviously there for money and I loved film and obviously people loved it too. And that was my favorite part of festivals was just that you got to be with people that all loved what you loved in the same way that on. And there's different expos for things. Film festivals was where all the film lovers went, which was awesome. Talking to people and intentional about conversations. And I think I tried and I usually did pretty well just having a really genuine conversation with people that the connections and the references were actually pretty natural. One of them in particular was funny because I was one of the head coordinators. It was all volunteer. It was just an internship in Eugene, the town where the school is. And they had recommended me to a company in the city that did videos and programs to help with education. And I had a lot of production background, didn't have too much in editing and whatnot, and I was still in school, but they're like, hey, this educational media company is pretty interested. They've seen your work through the internship. You should go chat with them. And I was like, okay, not a problem. So I sat down and I thought maybe there was an opportunity involved, but because I was in college and they'd all been internships, I just assumed they were going to give me some sort of project to do or work on. And then I sat down and we just had a conversation and we talked and they right then and there offered me a job. And it was higher than what I was been paying at my current job. And I was kind of taken aback, but in a really good way. I was just like, oh, wait, what? You're going to pay me for that? This is amazing. So from there, I honestly learned through different fests and different people how to hold value, how to go into things and tell bar worth, and how to really show your skill set. I'm not always as good of like the elevator pitch, but I am pretty good of I want you to see what you can do, and then I kind of let them speak for itself. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit of how the networking came and went in college, and then just sort of expanded through France and then coming back to LA.
Well, you definitely let your intellectual curiosity be a tool that creates a lot of these opportunities for you. And I don't think a lot of people have that skill set, or at least understand that it's important. Where did you, in terms of your, I would say, fearlessness in terms of taking on opportunity, especially where you may not know exactly what you're getting yourself into, but you're willing to just kind of jump in with both feet? Did that start early on, or did you play sports? Were you in theater? Like, I mean, tell us where you kind of built those chops and those skills.
That's an interesting one. I'm the youngest of four kids. And so I think some of it came from in my family. There was just growing up, there's so many of us and four kids all within like a 7-year age range gap. It was just chaotic when we were young. And I just learned within all of that, you got to speak up or else you're just kind of going to get mulled over in a really good way. I love my siblings. It taught me a lot. And honestly, it sounds kind of weird, but I rode horses when I was quite young, and I was taking lessons at first, and then we could no longer afford them, and I was honestly very devastated because I was young, and it was the one thing that was not part of my family. Like, I got to go, and I got to do it by myself, and I got to learn and be part of it. So I remember calling the gal, and I was like, look, I don't even have to get on one. Can I just come and, like, be around them? Like, I'll clean their stall, I'll like brush them, like whatever you need me to do. And I became like her right-hand man. And for years, kind of just taught kids lessons. We went on trail rides during the weekends. And it just, I think because it was mine and it wasn't one of my siblings, I just really took ownership of it. It just really taught me, like, if you work really hard, you can do most things. So I think just from there, I definitely did do sports. Growing up with my siblings, I got really like, what's my identity? Like, I want to find mine. I don't just want to be so-and-so's little sister, one of the Pyle clan. So even the festivals getting in, like Sundance has a huge waiting list and you don't normally get housed here. But I was just so determined. I really wanted to go to Sundance and I really wanted to be a part of it. And so I remember emailing and I was like, I'll definitely, but I can't go unless I have housing. It was just too expensive and I couldn't afford it. And they don't pay you to volunteer, obviously. And so I was like, I'll do anything. Like, I'll work. I guess kind of the same thing I did with horses. I was just like, I don't even have to see a film. I just want to be part of it. And I did. I remember emailing them and they told me I did not get housing. It was reserved for like third year volunteers. And I was like, please. And I think I've 2 or 3 times. They're like, we'll keep you on a list. So Sundance happens in January. And I remember it was Christmas and I was with my family and from Park City, Utah. And I was like, ooh, what is this? I looked at my messages and I was listening to them later. And it was somebody from the festival. And they were like, hey, like, we had a last minute cancellation. We actually do have housing available. We know that you were interested. If we're able to provide housing. And I had no idea how I was going to do it. I was just like, all right, yeah, absolutely. My answer is yes.
So, Audrey, I thought you said you didn't have an elevator pitch. That was perfect. Yeah, I mean, both of those stories are fantastic. So,
basically, if it's a short elevator ride, my name is Audrey Pyle. This is what I'm interested in, and I'm willing to do whatever's necessary to prove that I'm passionate about film. Boom, ding, elevator doors open. You walk out. That person in the elevator follows you and offers you a job. How funny is that? So it's evident you have a passion for film. I'm curious, Audrey, when you think and dream about your career in the film industry, you know, what are some of the stops that you want to take on the road to what it is that, I don't want to say you ultimately want to do because things are ever evolving, but when you thought about or think about your career in film, what is it that you want to do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like that you say it's ever evolving because I definitely agree with that. There are definitely times where I'm like, oh, I totally know what I want. We're good to go. And then there's times where I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then there's different positions and opportunities that present themselves to you that definitely take and be like, well, I'm not quite sure what this is, but like, take it and figure it out and do our best with it and then see where it goes. At this point in time, it's been an interesting blend. I definitely have learned so much from being a supervisor. I've learned a lot from my company and working in different teams and with the partners that we work with, like Netflix and HBO and Warner Brothers and things like that. And so I think just kind of being the hub of where the entertainment industry is has just sort of opened my eyes to everything kind of behind the scenes. And to be totally honest with you, like as of late, last year or so, I've just really noticed that HBO's content in particular is just something that really hits a chord, I think, for me. They just tell a lot of stories that I think are really important to be telling. They have a lot of just gender identity, a lot of cultural identity, sexual identities. And I just really love that they put everything on screen and they really sort of ride the line of what culture thinks and understands is like, okay, kind of like, all right, well, like, why do we think this? And through a really well-told stories. And so I've just noticed from the different clients that we work with that I really love. I think they choose very particular stories and they really give voice to a lot of people that we don't always see on screen. And I think that's really important. More important within my team as well. We obviously do dubbing with voice actors, but before we had a pretty small group of experienced dubbing actors that we would always go to. So since we've opened it up to more union talent, we probably get about half new cast for every show. And I push really hard to make sure that we're getting the representation that the original content owners wanted. Like, if this is a transgender character, I'd like it to be voiced by a transgender voice actor. And if it's female who wrote the script, I want a female to adapt the dubbing script.
Well, I was going to say, so in some cases, you sound like a coordinating producer or someone that can definitely organize production and you ensuring that you have the different voices that you're targeting represented. I wonder in terms of, again, your core skill set, breaking it down, because you do such a great analytical job about the outside, analyzing you, how much are you kind of breaking down where your skill set may fit? And are you staying on that roadmap or on that path to get to where kind of Mike was asking you, you know, and those different stops along the way to being a filmmaker or whatever? So are you doing the analysis, I guess?
Yeah, like on the production side, I definitely think so. Because I know that's just how my brain works. Those are things that I also just like, I like seeing a bigger picture and then understanding all the background details of everything that got it to be where it is. And as much as I really love the creative art that filmmaking is, I know that I'm a little bit better at maybe the business side of it. So I really love finding people that have these visions and then creating a map for them to understand how to actually get that on screen or how to get that financed or, you know, when and how you can shoot something like that and in that time frame. So, yeah, I think I'm kind of trying to take all of the skills I've been acquiring and figure out where to put that next, because I moved into the supervisor position because I had never been a supervisor of a dubbing team. I wanted to see what skills I could learn from that. And, you know, I just always want to work towards upward movement and keep trying different things that, again, like teach me and move in different ways. And the paralegal course, honestly, was taken. I was still a coordinator at the time. I didn't know that my boss would be leaving. And I feel like I'd hit my cap even at that position. And I was looking at resumes and looking at things online and different job openings. The business side of entertainment and like entertainment law and business seemed to be something that everyone was looking for. And I was at UCLA and I was like, this is really cool. And I went to one of their seminars and I was like, oh, that is, my brain kind of already does that. So yeah, for the next milestone coming up, I'm kind of trying to figure out the best way to combo all of those. The skills of being a supervisor, all this information that I now have about law, they helped. Netflix switched up their dubbing contract at the beginning of this year, and it changed a lot with how we deal with union. So knowing contract law really helps to not only analyze and understand it, but also to, I taught it to a couple of our teams because I was studying it in school and that was super helpful. So I'm not positive what the next milestone is, but I'd like it to be a combo of all of these things.
That's awesome. Several years ago, HBO had a program of film. Sugar was the title in English, Azúcar in Spanish, and it was a slice of life of an individual from the Dominican Republic who was striving to get into the major leagues. It was an awesome film. I mean, it went back to the Dominican Republic, then it tracked he and some of his colleagues and the experiences they had in the United States, and without spoiling it, you know, wasn't necessarily a happy ending, but it ended up being somewhat of a happy ending. So from the HBO perspective, I can understand exactly what you're saying. Now, moving to roles in a studio, most of the larger studios have business affairs and legal group department. And these are individuals that are primarily lawyers that will focus on, you know, all the legal issues that surround a studio, not trying to direct you there, but just having an open conversation about things of that nature. But I think Brian hit on the head with the skill set that you have accumulated and, you know, where you would like to go. Producing, being a producer seems like a natural fit.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I actually had a teacher in college. There was a course called The Art of Directing. There's an art of producing, an art of directing. And then for the course, we would bring in someone from the industry who had worked on pretty big projects. And then we would study their work. We would learn how they did it. And then for a week, they would come in and they would teach the class and we would do hands-on projects. And I loved the producing one. It was a really natural fit and I learned a lot. And then there was an art of directing one. And my professor, I think, kind of decided for me that producing was my thing and didn't really want me to do the directing one. And you had to apply to get into the course. And I applied and it kind of seemed like there was pushback. And I was, why can't I take this class? And she was like, well, is directing what you want? And I was like, well, I mean, no, but I do want to learn. And so I remember I got in, I got to take the course. And we ended up doing like a hands-on project for class. And we all formed teams. Someone played director, someone was a cameraman, someone was producer. And I ended up being a producer on the little short. And I came up with this spreadsheet for how we can do it and fill the time in the most efficient way, because we only had so much time with the actual director. Her name was Athena Sangari. And she was watching our short film be made and kind of just like walking around set and like giving us little tidbits here and there. And she saw my paper. She saw my production sheet. She's like, what is this? And I was like, oh, I just made it. I just thought it would be helpful for everyone to like kind of be on the same page. And she's like, this is amazing. Yeah. But yeah, producing,
It's interesting. Because I've had some clients and also people internally that I've worked with. And in doing performance evaluations, which you've been a part of, you know, at your job, I'm sure, there's a point where opportunity to come to you. But in the same sense, you setting that direction, you may actually accelerate your path to those goals quicker because you are being more intentional. What do you think of that, just as a thought and a general question?
Totally. Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. And I know there's been times, I wouldn't really say I'm like a wait for it kind of person. I do try to be pretty intentional with, okay, that didn't work, let's try this. Or like, here's an opportunity. What do you think about it? I think I just set a little bit more short-term goals. So for with the paralegal, to get through the whole course. And then when the supervisor position opened, I wanted to try my hand at it and see what skills I could learn in supervising. And again, I've even thought about how long do you kind of need to stay vested with a company in order for it to not look too flighty on your resume. I definitely moved up fairly quickly to the position I'm in now. And I really like that. And I definitely think I earned it. But the flip side is I don't want, as soon as I feel like I've got a couple months of supervising, to move on to the next thing, because I feel like that just doesn't look great on a resume and doesn't look great to prospective employers of, well, she just kind of bops around here.
Some millennials.
So I try to be intentional with the time I'm investing and the things I'm doing with
millennials
that time.
And Gen Z get a bad rap for that, knowing exactly when to make moves. Hey, just throwing in Todd and Mike, what's your feedback on that in terms of on a resume, what looks good in terms of tenure and time on the job?
Well, from a resume perspective, I think it's always good to show the different moves up and promotion opportunities that you've had. Us as recruiters, we look for that. Have you gotten promoted within your organization in a timely manner? It sounds like you've moved up pretty quick, which is great. And then continue to hone your skills. What I say, 10,000 hours make an expert or subject matter expert. So if you kind of break it down, you kind of see a career progression, but then slowly build your skills into different areas, such as the legal field. Now you've an understanding of contractual analysis and what have you, but then also continue to show that progression and the learning.
I'm going to give you contrarian viewpoint, Audrey. So I'm going to say to an extent, to hell with recruiters, to hell with the resume. And here's what I mean by that. I see that you are a go-getter. You will bust through a wall if there's something on the other side of that wall that you think is going to get you to where you need to get to. Example, you end up being at industry event, you're networking with someone, you guys have a great relationship, and this individual a couple weeks later says, you know what, Audrey, you told me you were interested in XYZ and you can do X, Y, and Z. You know what? We have an open position and the position might be two steps higher than you are now. It would not be advisable for you to say, and with a great company, by the way, that you can see it will lead you to what you want to do next. To me, it wouldn't be a great decision for you to say, you know what? I'm not going to pursue that role because I've only been in my current company for 4 months and I don't want that to look bad on my resume. To hell with the resume. To hell who looks at that resume thereafter. If that's a position that you think is going to get you where you need to get to, go ahead and get it. Because it's not like Audrey is out there applying to jobs. This is where someone knows who you are, has a good feeling about you, and is offering you a position. I mean, there are many professionals that have been in their industry and in their role for some time that get recruited all the time. So there's an individual that could be in a role for maybe 6, 7, 8 months, but someone that he or she has worked with in the past just got elevated. And they respect the person so much that they want that person to be on their new team. So as long as your story makes sense, your resume can look a variety of ways. So it doesn't have to be 2 years here and then move on, 3 years here and then move on. I mean, as long as the story makes sense, I as a recruiter, if you sat down in front of me and I look at your resume, Audrey, why are you here for 7 months? Well, because the CEO of this organization handpicked me to be on this team. Okay, I'm done. You've answered my question. Next question, Mike. Did that make sense?
I'll push back on this a little bit, though.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm...
Yeah, let me push back, though, because I think actually in Audrey's skill set of being thinking about shorter term goals, that is definitely something that would... That's achieving the goal, is being able to kind of understand where your efforts may take you and where you're being recognized. The challenge is looking at the resume over a 5-year span or a 7-year span and having a very broad narrative. And if not able to describe what that narrative is leading to, what some people may perceive is the person doesn't know what they want. And that may absolutely be true, but that does not help in an interview. So that's just my take on it. If you were able to say, though, that through all these experiences, I'm building up to be an executive producer, that makes I agree with Mike then, but I think unless you're able to kind of say out of these 10 skills that an executive producer has to have, they don't have to come in chronological order, right? So as long as you're getting that, I think you're in good shape. It's where I've had people in interviews say, you know, yeah, you know, well, I worked in the food and beverage, I did this, and, you know, I was in technology over in startup. And then I took this other job because I knew I had a contact over there. And what happens is they're selling me on their being a good or them being a good fit for a position, but I technically don't know. I know that they're but their narrative on how they fit into this versus maybe the competition may not be as strong. So I have other people with a little bit stronger of a pedigree that may lead to a position and they have a stronger story to tell that just may put them in a better position to get the job. So I just would say from a long-term perspective and short-term perspective, I think you need to think about both of those things as well.
Hello, foolish mortals and ghoulish delights. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you would also enjoy listening to audiobooks while in the car, at the gym, or hanging out at your favorite ghoulish cafe. Whether you want to get motivated in the morning or learn something new anytime, you can listen across all your devices with the Audible app. And never lose your place. As the largest producer and provider of spoken word entertainment, Audible has genre-bending Audible originals, binge-worthy audiobooks, an exclusive podcast to add to your library. Discover the perks of membership and unlock a listen for every moment and never lose your place. Download the Audible app today at www.audibletrial.com/skillsharp for your free 30-day trial. Once again, that's www.audibletrial.com/skillsharp for your free 30-day trial. Stay sharp.
Great points, and I'll just tack on to that. I would like to see you, Audrey, continue along the path that you're moving from an internal perspective. And what I mean by that, continue to be the person you are and work on those skills outside of work. In other words, that go-getter attitude, that assertive attitude, because you will be the person that will get a job offer before a job's actually posted. So those are the kind of things I'd like you to focus on, because then you don't have to worry about a knucklehead like me reading a resume and not really understanding the story. You will be a person who that hiring manager comes to me with your resume and says, Mike, this is the person we want for the job. Done deal. You don't even have to go through all this, you know, how should I write a resume? What words should I use? If you can continue down the path of doing the networking that you're doing, and, you know, like I said, just busting through those brick walls, you will more often than not be that person that defines the recruiting process as opposed to just being a cog in that recruiting process wheel.
Now, one of the challenges in hiring managers is that it's not oftentimes who's the best for the job right now. It's sometimes who thinks is going to stay the longest or be more committed to the job. And so that's where when they look at a resume and there's a lot of job jumps that aren't extremely strategic, the person's not questioning whether you could be the best candidate today, but they're thinking, am I going to be looking for this job opening in a year when she looks for the next thing? So that's the only other part that I would bring up to you.
Yeah, thank you. I've actually had a friend who, we had a discussion when I was applying for the supervisor position, and it kind of hurt at the moment that he said it, but I thought about it afterwards and I got what he was saying. If I had moved to a different company, I don't know, I'd bring you along. And I was like, wait, what? I'm really good. And he's like, no, you're a really hard worker. I get that. But you're so driven and I know you're like headed somewhere that I'm more of like a security. Like I would need to know, are you going to be there the whole year? And like, are you passionate about it? So yeah, thank you. That is really good advice. And I do think like now that the paralegal program has wrapped, it just finished last week. Yeah, I have really been thinking, even with the supervisor position, okay, what skills am I building right now? And what do I have under my belt that not even to recruiters, but like I would want to do next? Like what position or spot do I want to end up at? And like, what am I doing now that gets me there? So yeah, I definitely think like what you guys are suggesting of just that introspection and having that clear goal can really help to build the steps in and get to that point. I'm curious, guys. So being in Los Angeles, I know that half of getting any job or moving up in kind of any industry, but in particular to the city, it really is who you know. So just in thinking with like where I'd like to go next, and then also knowing that I have a lot of pride in the work that I do. And so for me, I often think if they can see my work, I won't have a problem getting a job. Working with people on projects is usually what's gotten me to the next step. So I was thinking lately about how I could get more people to see my work or have that like networking style connect. Because again, sometimes with the elevator pitch, I get a little bit like when people do it for me, it's a little used car salesman-y. I'm like, this doesn't mean anything. But if I've seen someone's work or I've worked with them on a project, I'm like, oh, they're great. They're efficient. They're on time. I like the way they do this. It's so much easier for me. Like, I absolutely want them on the next thing. So I'm curious, I don't know exactly how to phrase that question, but like what are some suggestions you guys would have for how to network in a way that's not just go to this event and say hi to everyone? I do think that's a great way to network, but also just, is there any way for networking for people to kind of like see
you have a reel that's available online where you could direct folks to go to and you have a business card ready to go? Or is it something you could put up online with public access to see your reel? Because I was recruiting Predators, the producer, writer, editors for NBC Universal, and we would go on Vimeo and look for people's reels.
Got you. Since I've produced on more stuff, I would basically be referencing content that I worked on and just would talk about my role in that, right? Because I've seen a lot of people that have online reels, online pages for like, this is what I've worked on. But a lot of them that I saw were like a lot of photographies or editing or dealing with camera work. And I don't do the technical aspect. I do a lot more of the production aspect. So it's kind of the same thing. I would just write what role I played.
Yeah, or show clips, or I don't know if you could clear the show logos or whatever, but have a reel ready to go. And it could be private access or access only given permission by you, so it's not out there in the public domain.
In thinking about your background, so there's a couple of things that you bring to the table. One, obviously the production knowledge, and it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, audio based or, you know, obviously audio is huge right now with podcasts and everything else, but, you know, whether it be, you know, video, film, etc. So you have that skill set. You also have an ability to understand staffing in the sense that you know different producers, you know editors, you know technical professionals that you work with. So you could literally build a lot of those staff lists yourself. And then lastly, that personal piece that, you know, we all have been applauding in your background. So I think what's missing, and this isn't, you know, this isn't a criticism, this is just an encouragement really, is when we talked about intentional. Intentional means I want to network in this certain space, because that means you've made a decision on the area that you want to be in. And that's going to make you going into a room that's much more targeted and meeting everyone easier. That also means that you can target volunteer events, you could target professional organizations, and you just have the skill set that anything you want to do, you're going to be able to do. So why not target the thing that you want to do the most today and have that be something that encompasses many things that make you happy? And then what's going to happen is the right people are going to see that. And that's going to be where your growth happens. Now, you may say, look, I'm also skilled at fencing or sailing. And 4 or 5 years down the line, once you reach a certain level, then you make a pivot. That's great. But you can't be open for everything today, because that's just too immense of a scope to network effectively. So I think if you start to network in that space of, look, I want to be in either line, if I eventually want to be executive producer, I know my path is either like coordinating producer or line producer. You start meeting people in that space, I think you will accelerate everything. So, I mean, your velocity to your goals will be quicker than, you know, most people that we've ever met, just because of your capacity and knowledge and, you know, your personal attributes.
And keep in mind that you can have a couple different spaces. So Brian is right on point, but just make sure if it's one or two spaces that they're congruent. And also what you want to do now is once you figure out what space you want to attack, in this example, if it's producing, start to think about the individuals in your network who are either doing what you want to do next, or who are well on their way to do that. And then make a list. In this example, could be 6 people. If those 6 people, let's make it a little more challenging. If 2 of those people are here in LA and 4 of those people are somewhere else in the United States of America, now you're going to devise a plan on A, how you're going to reach out to those people, B, how you're going to make them or let them understand what your value is in that marketplace, and C, you're going to put together a contact plan for them. So if the 2 people that are here in Los Angeles, if you're in a city in LA that may have Starbucks open, et cetera, you're going to pick one of those people. You're going to go to a Starbucks. You can't go inside, but you'll sit outside. You'll talk to that person, and now you're beginning that relationship. And another thing you can do, and of course, the people that aren't local, you can do what you're doing now, get on Zoom, email, et cetera, text. Then the other thing that you can think about doing is leverage social media. From the perspective, I know you don't have a lot of time right now in your work. However, being that we're spending more and more time indoors or at the house, I should say, think about something like blogging, to the extent that you are always talking about and showing individuals what it is you're doing in the field. Even that sheet that you put together for a director that, you know, was like, hey, I think I may use this in one of my future productions. So the more you are leveraging your network, and if you can leverage social media to show people that may not even know you yet that you are a subject matter expert in what you're doing now. And, you know, here's how I can leverage my current skills to become one of the best producers the world has ever known. That's when people will start to see you as what you want to be. So you're actually becoming what you want to be in your mind, if that makes sense. So you're that. So someone's going to see, hey, I need a producer. I need someone who thinks about things in this particular way. I just saw this person online. I'm going to reach out. So recruiter will see your social media. Recruiter may see your blog, reach out to you and say, we have a position open that you may be interested in.
One of the reoccurring themes that we have are
that makes practice, total sense. Practice, thank you.
We're talking about practice.
Talk about practice.
Not a game.
Hey, Audrey, one other thing that you brought up, which I think is it may be a answer to your overall question, is that your affinity and knowledge of HBO. So a lot of people, if they are open to moving around and they're not so caught up in, hey, I have to come into a company at this position, the best strategy would be to get into the right company, because that then you're a part of a system of development where they want people to move around. I mean, most companies say you have to be in your role for 6 months or 12 months, but essentially you could start now networking. So everything's intentional with your networking. Like Mike said, you're building up your professional brand. You know, as Todd said, you're kind of showing people your skill set as you go. And as there ends up being actual jobs, as there ends up being like a task force, like one of our previous guests, Jolene Timmons from the largest talent agencies spoke about, the goal is to always put yourself in a position to audition. And why not be in a company to where now you could bounce around many different areas, but it still leads you in an intentional route and you're able to achieve your goals.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And thank you. That's really, really good advice.
Audrey, do you have any question or questions, final questions for us or either one of us?
Your one shot. Go for it.
Ooh, I mean, this might go over 45 minutes, or maybe you guys can keep it short. But I guess I'm curious for you guys, what is your favorite aspect of what you do for your job?
Well, speaking for myself, I love seeing folks like yourself, up and comers, just kind of grabbing, going with it and making a career out of your passion. And that's the one thing that we want to talk about as a recurring theme throughout our podcast. So you're living that particular practices, and you know, we so appreciate you sharing a lot of your insights, because it's exactly what we've been talking about over the last few episodes of our show.
Yeah, and I like the reveal of people being strong in certain skills or aspects of business and not realizing it. So providing them with kind of an understanding, awareness, and then a system of continuing to build those skills is always an enriching thing for me personally. And then after time, obviously they get hired, grow, they're hiring you later on down the line. I mean, all those things, and seeing that growth is a blessing. I actually have an example of someone that I think you know, that you know I work with and saw grow a lot over the time that I've known her. And next thing you know, she's now producing the show. So, I mean, this is crazy how the world turns. Our own Alyssa Pruitt. So one of my joys in life. She's all right.
Best thing I like about it.
She's okay.
Best thing I like about what I do is the paycheck.
I'm just kidding. You're right. She's the best.
Just keeping it real.
Keeping it real. Keep it real. I love it.
That's how I do it. Just keeping it a buck.
Thank you for listening to Skillsharp, the podcast. Please remember to subscribe and even refer our podcast to anyone who feel that would gain a benefit out of our coaching and content. Send any questions and comments to podcast@skill-sharp.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at skillsharp1, the number one, or visit us online at www.skill-sharp.com. This is Todd Nakasone signing off for Mike Daniels, Brian Wright, Alyssa Pruitt, Will Kelso, and the rest of our team at Skill Sharp, the podcast. Till next time, stay sharp.